Hi, this is Alan Nelson, your host for Rev Audio Magazine. Our guest today is Bill Eason. Bill's a VP for Eason Bandy & Associates, one of the most highly respected church consultants and futurists. He has over 35 years of experience as a pastor in four churches and two denominations, and today we're going to be talking about the four major reproductive movements in America today. Bill, welcome to Rev.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, now, that's kind of a mouthful, four major reproductive movements in America today. What in the world are you talking about with that?
Well, I noticed back in the late 80s, early 90s, that the world was speeding up and moving from incremental change to exponential change. And so I wrote about that in one of my first books, Dance with Dinosaurs, and then another one, Leadership on the Other Side, in which I said that since this is happening in the world, the odds are within the church world that we're going to be seeing a major seismographic shift from doing things by addition to doing things by exponential steps, and that the movement would probably result in not just multiples of what has been done in the past, but movements of multiples, which best way to talk about it is that the shift from doing ministry to developing reproductive movements that run all the way through ministry, such as in the past, the emphasis really was on a church planting a church, and the mother church, the daughter church, and so forth, and the goal was kind of to get as many churches as possible to plant a church. And now today, the movement that anybody with any eyes is seeing is it's no longer about one church planting a church. It's about apostolic leaders who have caught the vision of developing churches that develop reproducing type churches, so that it's not a church planting a church. It's multiple churches planting multiple churches, even to the point of having a staff person on board who's responsible for this reproduction taking place. And we're seeing that throughout all the healthy church systems that we see, whether it's church planting or multiple sites or even leadership development. Reproduction is the key. Leadership development is now kind of an old world kind of concept. Today, the issue isn't raising up a leader. It's more like raising up teams of leaders who hive themselves off in multiple forms. It's no longer a one-on-one as much as it is releasing teams of potential future leaders. So the emphasis has really shifted from a leader, a church, a local site to multiples of all of those.
So, Bill, help enumerate for me here. What are these four major reproductive movements? One, two, three, four.
Well, one is church planting.
Okay.
One is multiple sites.
All right.
One's raising up leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And for the life of me, I can't remember what the fourth one is.
So one-on-one evangelism.
Okay, one-on-one evangelism.
Well, I have a question. I was just talking about this with Alan before we came on. I might be reading it wrong, but it seems to me that the multi-site movement might be a little bit going up against raising up leaders. Some of how I see it is, we create a multi-site and a venue because we can't find a leader to start a church. Am I seeing that wrong?
Well, not necessarily. If you in the past you thought of a leader as a charismatic person who could come in and plant a church and et cetera. In the multi-site movement, people are beginning to realize that there are different levels of leaders.
Yeah, and different kinds of leaders.
And every site has to have a leader on board, but not necessarily the catalytic type leader that can go out and against all odds birth a church and grow it.
So what kind of leader do you need if you're doing a multi-site? you're not getting the charismatic teacher type now. So who should you get?
Well, the outgoing, shepherding kind of a person who can organize. A lot of catalytic leaders can't organize.
Yeah.
You know, you see that in Paul, you see it in Moses, and you know all the biblical stories. But you know, the concept in the shift of leadership development, it's a serious shift from looking for those isolated, standalone type leaders like a Wayne Cadero or Rick Warren, and begin to realize that there are tons of what you might call late adopters or whatever term you want to use, who have that potential to be a leader. But there's another shift to this. At the last Exponential Conference, I heard Dave Ferguson say that the reproductive mindset is so embedded in some of these churches that they just begin to assume that every staff member over time will go to plant a church. Now, that's a huge shift from the church of the 1990s that developed a great staff and built a great church, but no one, and no catalytic leader, no Dave Ferguson or whatever else, was really thinking that the real job of my leadership is not in the building of this church or even the multiple sites, but it's bringing up my staff to the point they all want to leave. That's a huge shift.
That is. Hey, Bill, when we talk about movements, we look at what's happening around the country. You refer to Exponential Conference. I didn't get to go, but heard there are just shy of 3,000 people there, which is amazing. When I was planting church in Southern California and then later in Scottsdale, Arizona, church planting was newer. It was a little bit, you know, for the how should I say it, the maverick or the black sheep, you know, to do something off the side. But now it's become almost in vogue, popular. A lot of people are really paying attention to it. Why this emphasis? Is it just a cultural thing? Is God doing a new thing or both? What do you read it?
Let's overlay it with the book of Acts. Same thing happened in the book of Acts. If you look at Acts, it talks about God added daily.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he uses the word, the Greek word for addition. Later on, it talks about God multiplied, and then toward the end, God added myriads of people. I think that something is underfoot, and I think if you look around, it's not just in any one particular denominational tribe or group of independents. It's part of this seismographic shift that the whole world is experiencing right now, and especially in the parts of the world where Christianity is growing, the emphasis has shifted from building a church to winning a nation, from building a church to changing the world, from one-on-one conversion to mass conversions. It's part of there are two pieces to it. One is part of the world, the movement from telephone to internet and the exponential way over, you know, 10 years ago, my life wasn't ruled by email. Today, my life is ruled by email.
Ruined or ruled?
It is. But you know what I mean. Two of the things that I use the most every day today is internet and email. They were on my plate in the 1990s, but not a very big play. And I think that whole movement in the world, one piece of what's happening is what's happening worldwide. The other piece is, I think God always moves or within movements or causes movements. And I think something's underfoot today because everywhere I go, I'm running into more and more apostolic leaders. You didn't see them 15, 20 years ago.
So, Bill, if God is creating this wave, I imagine there's a lot of guys in churches that have been there for a while, traditional churches, who feel like they're missing it. What can they do to catch this wave?
Well, one of the huge pieces that's holding back those pastors is democracy and consensus within their church. God never moves within a democratic system. God never moves within consensus. All you got to do is read the scriptures over and over. God works through a person, not a committee, not a board, not through voting. You can't vote on whether to participate in God's movement. And I think what's separating the potentially great churches from those that don't have a future, period, in the new world, is the emphasis on democratic rule within the church rather than apostolic leadership, and the unwillingness to follow the sporadic, irrational movement of the Spirit as opposed to following the corporate democratic board-driven type of congregation. As long as the sheep oversee the shepherd, you won't participate in these movements.
So, Bill, let me push back on a little bit, because if you look at the gifting, the wiring of the typical pastor, they have either teaching gifts and or shepherding gifts, which tend not to be sort of the strong leader and or the catalytic leader. Secondly, especially in mainlines, when I'm out training, speaking, you get a lot of pushback from them saying, hey, our bylaws don't allow it. You know, we're committee run, we're committee led, we got to take it to the session, the council, the congregation needs to vote on it. What's your advice to them when they come up against these things, either their wiring or the system?
Well, they got two choices, to change the system or to leave the system. If they want to participate in what God's doing in the world, it's that simple. But I've never found. Well, you take a Mike Slaughter, for example. I hope Mike wouldn't mind me using him as an example. He's in one of the most checks and balanced, top-down denomination on the planet. Same one I'm in. Mike figured out how to use the system, get around the system, ignore the system, whatever word you want to use, to do the ministry God called him to do. I did the same thing in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. Most pastors that say our Constitution won't allow us are using that as an excuse for not figuring out how to allow God to move within that type of system. And I've worked with too many of them to know that is the truth. It's more of an excuse than anything else. But you see, these pastors, first of all, the shepherd type ministry isn't biblical. I mean, there's, you know, Ephesians 4 doesn't talk about a pastor being a shepherd. The reason these guys and gals have this in their head is because that's what mainline Protestantism has preached now for basically 100 years. Nobody can make me, I'm a United Methodist, just like Mike, nobody can make me believe that the circuit riders that made my denomination the great denomination it once was, nobody can make me believe they had a shepherd's heart. Shepherd's heart wouldn't get on a horse and know that their life expectancy was 18 months. A shepherd's heart wouldn't ride in, preach the gospel, and ride out. The shepherd heart would just have to stay and take care of and love those people and keep them from growing. No, the pastor understands that the role of the sheep is to feed themselves.
Okay, so let me interrupt here, because I agree with you fully. In fact, on a previous podcast, we talked about the role of the pastor really is to multiply and equip, not to get down into the mire of the day-to-day tasks of caring. Be responsible for care taking place, but not doing it.
Right.
What happens in the process? How do we get bogged down? Why have we evolved, really devolved, into this role where the pastor is spinning all the plates and doing all the end-user ministry?
Well, it didn't happen overnight. And the guys and gals today that are saddled with it, they didn't cause it to be that way. but they grew up in it over a long period of time. And, you know, it's like the frog in the kettle thing. The water just keeps getting a little hotter and a little hotter, and all of a sudden you realize you're dead. A lot of the pastors today are basically dead. And it's not their fault. It's not the system's fault. It's a long historical period. And when I say to these pastors, look, if you don't want to play the game anymore, then either change the rules of the game or get out. And Bill Cornelius and I, actually, in the first chapter of our book, Go Big, How to Have Explosive Growth, we chronicle the difference between his ministry and mine. He has three people on his board. He wants to do something. He can make a decision within 24 hours. When I wanted to do something in the early years, it would take 6 months. Now, if you chronicle 6 months, if you add it up over 24 years where I was at the last church, 6 months, that means I had 12 years of ministry until finally in the mid-80s, we just chucked the board of 360 people and went to a team of 11 who made all the decisions, and it rocked my denomination. And now if you look at the rule book of my denomination, it's been changed to where a church the size I had didn't have to have 360 people on the board. It can function with a board of 10 or 12 people. Any system can be changed. Martin Luther proved that. I mean, it's just you can't blame a system. What some of these pastors need to do is challenge the system. Eternity's too important. Missing out on the movement that God is about at this particular time is too important. You get one life, you look back, and if you wasted it, that's a shame.
That's good. We've only got a couple minutes left. Bill, what would be some next steps? You're a pastor, you're frustrated, you're saying, yeah, by gum, I need to do some changes. Where do we start? Where do we begin?
First of all, what does God want you to do? And the way I look at that is, what's God called you to do and to be? And I think people should follow their call. And if you don't have a call, then you need to go get it. And a call to pastor a church, I don't think that's a call. What kind of a pastor has God called you to be? And where does your heart really resonate? Figure that out. You know, Paul went off for 13 years before he ever did anything. Jesus was 30 before he ever took any action. Get off the treadmill. Get your Bible and go off somewhere until you really figure out what are you willing to really die for? And when you find that, then act on it. There's just too many people don't have really anything in ministry that they're willing to die for. I think that's the key. Once you find that, then the next steps are pretty easy. You know, I don't know any second step. I just know that's follow your passion, find it, follow it, and you'll never regret it. Even if it costs you your job and you lose your church, you'll never regret it. Because you know you're in the midst of what God wants you to do with your life, and God will provide for you.
Bill, thanks. You're a wise prophet, and it's always nice to hear from you.
I enjoyed it.
Good. Well, if you'd like to know more about Rev Magazine, go to rev.org and find about the world's most practical church leader periodical. I'm Alan Nelson with my co-host, Brian Mavis, wishing you God's best in your ministry.